This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Today, our special guest is Mike O'Neill. Mike owns O'Neill Property Management in Riverside, been open for business for many years. And Mike, we welcome you to our show.
Glad to be here.
How did you get in the property management business?
Well, interesting story. I've always been interested in real estate, and I bought a few rentals while I was in college. And when I got out of college, I took a job working for General Electric. Didn't really like doing that. Went back and talked to the guy that bought a couple of the rentals for me, and he needed a property manager. And this was with the Century 21 franchise in 1979. So I went to work with him and worked with him for a couple of years, got my broker's license, and then opened up my own business.
Ever get involved in the other side of it as far as listings and that type of stuff?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I bought, sold, managed, did leases, land sales. I did just about everything at the beginning. And then, I don't know, somewhere along the line, maybe 10, 15 years ago, it just got a little too difficult to do all that. So I started more or less specializing in the management part. I have a few agents that work for me that do some selling, but we're principally a property management company.
Who's a typical client that owns the property that you manage? What do they do for a living, or are they in the property business full time?
Most of them own anywhere between one and four properties. Most of them live in California. A lot of them are even local in town. Just not really large landlords. We don't have very many large accounts. It's mostly smaller accounts that want to have it handled professionally, then property handled professionally.
Are they in the real estate industry, or do they own a business or work outside of the industry?
I would say both, but most of them are not in the real estate industry.
Okay. What's their long-term plan? Do they keep them for price escalation, or are they typically going to keep these for a long haul?
I got two classes. I've got the ones that keep them for a long time. They buy them as investments. They know they're going to be investments. They're holding them, in many cases, till they retire. The other group are people that may have lived in the house before, moved out, didn't want to sell for whatever reason. A lot of those people will have them from 2 to 5 years, and then they'll sell, and sometimes they'll rebuy another property, and sometimes they won't.
Okay. If I go on your website and I'm a tenant, I get to a page for rental application, and it says before you begin. And so what are some of the things that I'm going to need to have in place before I'm even going to be considered being able to rent a property that you manage?
Our typical standards are 3 times the rent in income or a greater amount than that, obviously. Good landlord references in your past. We want to have reasonably good credit. I mean, we don't expect people to be absolutely perfect, but we don't want to see a pattern of credit issues. Or if we do have some issues, we want to know why and be able to factually come to the conclusion that it's not going to happen again. You can start there, and a lot of it is background information besides those 3 things. But those are the 3 legs of what we use to rent: income, rental history, and credit history.
How negative is a past eviction?
Pretty bad.
Okay.
In most cases, I'd say 99.9 out of 100, you're not going to get rented to by us.
Okay.
I mean, it has to be a really good reason, but that's kind of the worst scenario that can happen to a landlord, and we don't want to try to expose a landlord to somebody that's already happened to. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a rare case where it might have been something that caused the eviction with beyond a tenant's control. We might be able to work with that, but it's very rare.
I think one of the reasons I wanted to ask you a question is, to be honest with you, there's a lot of parallels between property management and being a hard money loan broker, in that you act as a filter. So we have trusted investors that really have no idea of the process that occurs prior to them even getting a phone call saying we have a trusted. And in a way, that's exactly what you do. That's what this page is about. The filter begins here. In other words,
right.
Don't fill out an app. Don't spend your $45. If you're in one of these categories, it's not going to work out, so don't bother. But when people take on management themselves, they don't really have any filter in place.
No, and a lot of times their decisions are emotional. You know, did they like the person when they met them? How long has their property been vacant? You know, when's their next mortgage payment due? Too many of the reasons that they decide on a tenant are just not stepping back and taking a look at the overall qualifications. I think it's a wise idea, whether you do it yourself or you hire somebody. You just need to step away and don't make a decision based on what your needs are. You do it based on what the quality of the applicant is only.
In the front page, where you before you begin, all rents are connected to a 1-year lease. Why is that an important issue?
Well, part of it is these people are paying me to find these tenants, and they don't want a tenant to move in and move back out in 2 months and then go through the same process. Remember, they're paying me to find the tenant. The property is vacant, typically. While we're finding the property, that's costing them money. When the property turns over, there may be some maintenance and repairs that need to be done. So they don't want to be going. They don't want to be grinding through that process on a regular basis. A year lease, unless an owner doesn't want to keep the property for a year, there really isn't any reason. And I always remind the owners that a tenant that wants to move into a month-to-month property is making their decisions month-to-month.
Okay.
So could end up being an expensive thing to do.
I made reference of the correlation between hard money lender. When we're taking a phone call, when I don't take phone calls for that, but Craig does. I listen to Craig talk all the time. And the conversations that he has, if you said, okay, if you didn't know his position in the company, is he a salesman or is he an underwriter? You would say, well, that guy's definitely the underwriter. Because he's asking questions almost to prevent a loan. And in a way, I get the sense the property management situation is a little bit similar in that you are favoring the client that is your customer and having a tenant earn the right to get in their property. Is that kind of akin to the same process?
I would think so, but I wouldn't say that we are almost looking to not rent to them, but we definitely know where to go to look to get the information. And we keep digging to what we until we get what we want. If you're self-employed, don't give me a profit and loss statement. Give me your last 2 years' tax returns, and we'll start from there, and we'll work our way from there outward. I mean, you have to always make sure you get the information that you need. You don't avoid it, but you definitely want to have a healthy skepticism. There's no doubt about that. But obviously we're trying to get these properties rented, but we turn down more apps than we approve.
Yeah, well, that's that sounds real familiar.
Bet.
The typical renter, have they decided not to buy for some reason, or are they at a stage of life where they're not capable of getting a yes answer from a lender and they will ultimately be a buyer?
I'd say both, but in this environment, there are not that many people that can afford to buy a house right now. So their best alternative is to rent a house within what their budget will allow and look into the future when maybe there's more income or different circumstances that might allow them to buy. But our tenants typically, when they move in, they're staying. I mean, I'm not saying we don't have tenants that are buying. We sure do. But the typical tenant is there to rent.
What's the typical length of stay for a tenant?
Oh, it keeps getting longer and longer. I really did a research on it several years ago, and in that time it was like 3.5 years. I bet it's well over 4 now.
Wow, that's a pretty long time.
It is. You try to treat them well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, once there are tenants, when they have issues, we like to get right on them and take care of them, keep them happy, and treat them fairly. If there's something that they've done wrong, we point it out, but we try to do it in a professional manner so that it's not taken personal, and we try to keep them at our properties.
I know there's a tenant that you won't rent to. Is there a property that you would look at and say, I really would rather not manage that? What would that type of property be?
Most of the time, it's the owner you don't want to do business with, not the property itself.
Okay.
I mean, because it can be a reflection of a particular owner. Not always. Some owners are willing to heed our advice, but some of these properties are in such poor condition, we don't want to be anywhere near them unless they get improved. If they get improved, then we know we have the right kind of owner. If they don't, then we don't have the right kind of owner for us anyways, and we need to move on. But, I don't know that there's an inherent property that's that bad, but there might be some with structural or functional deficiencies that we just can't get around. But we always look at these properties before we take on the management, and at that point we try to make decisions on that type of thing on our end too. But we hope to not run into too many of those.
One of the questions, you've managed a property for me, but one of the questions you asked me surprised me, and you said, does a backyard have grass?
We try not to take them on without grass in the backyard. And I know that's a big issue in Moreno Valley and a few other places. The reason behind that is that somebody that doesn't have or care about having a backyard is probably not the tenant you want in your property. Does that make sense?
Exactly. That's why I asked the question. I mean, that's the kind of insight you can't know until you have, you know, 1,000 of these under your belt where you go, okay, well, that's a repetitive theme.
Yeah, backyards are, I mean, they don't have to be elaborate, you know, but they need to be functional. And just like the house, you know, if I have a house and it's got peeling paint all over the place, what kind of tenant's going to move into a house with peeling paint all over the place? A bad one. And I don't think that does the owner any good at all.
No, it doesn't. We used to see you on TV. Your cable TV ads and stuff. So how has advertising your business changed now?
Changing all the time. Cable was very, very successful for a long, long time. And we had, in our local area, it was Charter. And they used to, at the time, they used to allow for local advertising. They had a channel, which was Channel 3, which was very good. And we did infomercials on that channel. And we also did advertising on regular cable channels. But then the cable market started to get so fractured. We just weren't getting the response when you started to have some of the satellite companies coming in and so much other competition. So we eventually abandoned cable advertising and moved more into Yellow Pages advertising and now more into internet advertising. So it just keeps changing.
Yeah, that's, same thing with us. I used to buy all my properties with an ad in the Press Enterprise that said I bought houses. And, of course, no one gets the paper now, so it wouldn't work too well.
Well, we still occasionally run an ad in the newspaper, but our website and the company we deal with, AppFolio, automatically enrolls us into like 20 different sites that get us tenants. Plus, we advertise, like I said, through internet services. We use YP for a lot of our advertising, and they parcel it out to several of the search engines. But yeah, the newspaper is, I may have ran 3 ads all year long in the newspaper, and we used to run sometimes 20 of them at a time.
Yeah, completely changed world. The group of investors that we have are very typically renting directly to owners, trying to save money on the management. So what are some of the pitfalls that they are going to run into?
Well, probably first and foremost, they're going to have a problem if anything goes wrong. You know, if the rent's coming in easily every month, great. If everything's going smoothly at the property, great. you know, when you run into an uncharacteristic problem, that's when it's really good to have a management company in there. Say you have a slab leak at the property and you have to coordinate that, get the tenant a place to live. Say there's mold, say that there's fair housing issues that are being claimed or code compliance issues that are getting involved with cities and counties and what have you. Those are a lot of things that the average person really isn't prepared to handle. Plus, the challenge of the changes in laws and regulations and the norms of how things are done. Unless you're in it every day, it's tough to keep up with that. Our state legislature passed 1,000 new bills last year, and several of them had to do with real estate. So if you're going to do it yourself, it's a part-time job, and you have to make sure you put in the time to keep up with it, and you're prepared to handle the problems when they happen.
Yeah, one of the factors you kind of brought up right in the one of the statements you made is that it's pretty easy to run an ad that's discriminatory, and you would never believe it was.
Oh, there's words you can't use, phrases. You can't put great family house. I'll give you an, does that mean that couples without children aren't welcome? I mean, you can go on and on. Their executive property is another illegal thing to say, and those will get the wrath of HUD or fair housing down on you. You could end up having a complaint filed against you and have all kinds of issues to deal with, to work your way through that.
Yeah, we actually did a test one time of 20 questions, you know, which one of these is these statements are illegal. And it turned out they were all illegal and they all sounded pretty reasonable. So, and none of them were actually one of them was legal. I forgot. And it had to do with you were renting a room in your house. And in that case, you can be pretty discriminatory. But other than that, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, if you're renting a part of your own home, you can do a lot of things you cannot otherwise do. But we don't handle renting of rooms, nor do we ever recommend it. I think it's a very poor idea. I've seen people do it, and it's come to me in the horror stories that they tell me. And by the way, I get a lot of horror stories from professional investors that get themselves into a mess and then call us. So be careful what you get yourself into, because sometimes by the time I get a hold of it, it's a very difficult situation to get them straightened out.
Yeah, it's not easy to get people out of a property in California. That's if you take a look at various state laws, we have one that's pretty lenient toward the tenant, that's for sure.
It is, and it's getting more costly to evict the tenant, and it's taking longer to do it. The best solution is in the selection of the tenant.
Yeah, absolutely. Vacancies. How have vacancies changed? Let's start in, you know, the downturn. We're in 2008 and 9, where, you know, it's really a price crashing market. Have vacancies, did vacancies grow a lot in that era, and has that radically changed now in 2016?
Well, every time we have a recession, vacancies increase and rents either flatten out or they go down. The one in 2008 was far worse than any of the other ones that I've been in since I was in the business. So we had a combination of vacancies for a long time and rents dropping significantly, 10%, maybe even more in some areas, maybe as high as 20%. It was really difficult, and there were so many foreclosures, so many people losing jobs. It was hard to qualify a lot of people that did apply to rent. So it was a very difficult time. Now you fast forward to 2017 or 2016, really. We started seeing a significant change then, but the rental markets have tightened up. The vacancies are as low, if not lower, than the whole time I've been in the business. Rents are starting to move up. It is a better time to be a landlord. There's no doubt about that. The offshoot and the concern is that they also have more requirements of landlords than what we used to, though, but at least you're getting paid more for it.
What is the the top end, let's say in city of Riverside. So I have this fabulous property, let's say, you know, this is hypothetical. I've got 5,000 square foot, really cool custom home. I decide I'm going to live in Florida for a few years and I'm going to lease this out. What is the number that you just go, you know what, it doesn't matter what the house is, isn't going to rent for more than that?
Somewhere around 3,500.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, give or take. And I mean, it's just what the people that are listening need to understand that there's only in our area so much somebody will pay to rent. I mean, they just, and when you're starting to talk 3,000, 3,500, I mean, I've got properties in Corona going over 3,000. I've got some out there that are doing that. But really, even in Corona, I haven't been really to get much more than 3,500 for much anything. I'm not saying we couldn't give it a try for an owner, but typically those 5,000 square foot heavily upgraded properties don't come into our rental portfolio in the first place. The owners don't rent them.
In the management contract that you have, how much leeway do you have to make independent decisions of repairs that might be needed? You get a notification from a tenant there's an issue.
Well, we have a maintenance reserve that the owner sets up with us in the beginning. Okay, current owner of a single family dwelling would be $350. It would get higher if it was multiple units. Depends on how big the project is. Anything underneath that, we just automatically take care of. Obviously, we're trying to make rational decisions and do it at the best, make the best possible decision for the owners. We're not just being indiscriminate. And by the way, when we even do minor repairs, if we find out that the tenant caused these repairs to happen, the tenant is back charged for the charge, and that happens all the time, more than people would think. Now, we do have a clause that allows us to exceed that number if it's an emergency, and I think the owners want us to exceed that number if it's an emergency, because elsewise they could have worse problems if we didn't. But it's very rare. Typically, we can get an owner on the phone if we have a problem like that and talk to them before we even do that.
Give me an example of a tenant-caused defect or damage that they probably think, well, you know, the owner's going to cover, and as a management company, you're able to tell them, well, no, that was initiated by you. So give me an example.
Oh, I could give you a lot, but how about toys in a toilet?
There you go.
Toys in a toilet. How about what goes down your garbage disposal that doesn't belong there, like grease? You know, that can clog up all your plumbing lines, or they grind a spoon into the garbage disposal and it breaks it.
Right.
Most broken windows are tenants' responsibility unless they're caused by high winds or a break-in. Bended, broken screens are typically, unless they've been there a long time and they've just worn out, there's a whole host of things that the tenants can be responsible for. And every contractor that we send to properties has already been trained by us to list on the bill if it's tenant-caused. And typically, we try to get the tenant to sign that they realize this when we're at the property. The vendors have them sign a copy of their bill right there. That's our game plan. They don't always want to, but we try to get them to.
What are the odds of somebody just saying, okay, I'm going to manage my own property, having the ability to call a very reliable contractor for a wide swath of, trades? I mean, isn't that one of the benefits that you guys have been dealing with these people for probably a very long time?
We deal with a lot of our vendors for a very long time. We're always bringing in new people, though. You know, there's somebody new that comes in almost every couple of months that we start using, but we've vetted them before we bring them in. We've checked out their background, their pricing. We make sure that they have their contractor's license, liability insurance, workers' comp insurance, so that we're not putting our owners in jeopardy. But I would say that there is a very good chance that private parties, whenever they send people out, sometimes make poor decisions.
Mike, what's your website and phone number you could be contacted at?
It's very easy. It's O'NeillProperty.net. Phone number is 951-684-7510, and when you call that number, you will talk to somebody. You won't be put into a voicemail system.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us. We're going to do another segment where we're going to take Mike's management hat off and put on his ownership hat on, as he does own some rentals. And so we'll talk to you soon, Mike. Thank you.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.